It's Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell. We don't have Wes Collins. He's having to deal with court issues. This is the first of the month, a very busy time for Wes. But we do have Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins with us this afternoon. And as always, want to remind you, you can always go to the website, Harvell and Collins, to get more information. And also to remind you about the phone number, 252-726-9050, 726-9050. Cecil Harvell with us today. Cecil, good afternoon to you, and I know that...
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
And I know
welcome to Tuesday, after Labor Day. Yeah. Wow.
And literally the first Monday of the month for all intents and purposes, because we just sort of lopped yesterday off. But a lot happening, and I know you wanted to continue the conversation from last week, and I just want to preface this with a comment. I learned a lot about the difference between a deed and a title, but more importantly, the impact that it takes, or the importance of deed research. I mean, this is fascinating. So you have some more to share with us.
Yeah, sure. And let's kind of review a little bit, and then we'll move forward. Absolutely. A deed, Lockwood, would be one manner, one way in which someone receives or has title to property. There are certainly other ways in the state of North Carolina where we can own and or claim title to property without having a deed. And probably the most common method other than a deed is simply to have inherited the property through an estate, through a last will and testament, or even through just an intestator without a will, estate. Many people inherit their property. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes when we begin to talk about the types of ownership that there happen to be relative to real property. But absolutely, one desires to have a clean and non-defective title, either be it through a deed or be it through inheritance or be it through some other kind of ownership, some other kind of method. And that is, of course, why we recommend that a buyer obtain title work.
Mm-hmm.
And it is caveat emptor, or buyer beware, in the state of North Carolina. It's the buyer's responsibility to secure their title examination. And many times folks will think, Lockwood, well, is that really that important? They've owned this property for a while.
Right.
I don't think there's any problem. We've asked them about it. We've talked to the realtors about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it really necessary? And the answer to that question is yes, it is, Lockwood, because there can be hidden defects. This is going to get complicated, but there can be hidden defects to title of a property. And that's why you need title insurance, so that if for some reason there is something touching and concerning your real property that maybe the public record doesn't show. An example of that would be that, yes, the public record shows that Mr. Jones deeded the property to Mr. Smith, who's now selling it to ourselves, but Mr. Jones was under undue influence. Or that's a forgery. Even though it's under notary, Mr. Jones did not sign that deed. And so several years later, someone comes forward and says, no, Mr. Jones did not sell that property. He did not convey it. That deed is fraudulent. That deed was obtained by misrepresentation. That deed is was under undue influence. Well, see, Lockwood, these are things that the public record would not show. The public record is showing the signature of Mr. Jones. Excuse me. And we're able to assume that that signature is valid in all aspects. Well, you know, title insurance would cover that. So boundary line disputes. So many easements that are hidden potentially or not as clear as we would like them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, another one, and you mentioned this, Lockwood, when you and me were just visiting before the program, you know, in our neck of the woods, Craven County, Carteret County, even New Hanover, Jones, Onslow, there's so much development.
Right.
And there are so many, if you will, community ways in which people are owning property. And what do I mean by this? I mean restrictive covenant.
Uh-huh.
Homeowner association bylaws, anything having to do with potentially assessments or charges relative to a subdivision,
mm-hmm,
or relative to a condominium or planned urban development. So it is really important that one get a title search so that they can see whether or not any of these issues are out there lurking. You do take the title to your condominium, your townhome, or your community development. You take the title subject to the restrictive covenants and any kind of association dues and or assessments that may be pending at that time. And so, again, beware, caveat emptor, there's a lot to be concerned about when you start putting your good money out there buying a piece of property.
Right, and in many instances, absolutely the largest and most substantial investment that everyone makes is on real estate, predominantly private homes, their personal homes, but also real estate for commercial properties as well. I know there are more to come here in just a moment, Cecil, but before we go into that, I had already sketched out a question for you, and that had to do with HOAs and restrictive covenants. And there may be instances, and I'm wondering, you know, individuals receive the property via title, it's been bequested to them, it was bequeathed in a will, they received it. And sometimes, I would venture to say that they are not aware of these restrictive covenants and homeowners association rules and regulations, and they may actually, could they, in fact, impact that that title transfer. In other words, it automatically would assume that maybe the the homeowners association has right of first refusal on the transfer of title. Can that happen?
It happens frequently, Lockwood.
Really?
These condominiums and townhomes and community developments, you know, some of them are just so very attractive, and we get lost in the, if you will, the cosmetics of where we're living, and we forget that all of these developments, including just subdivisions, can be subject to some restrictive covenants that we just don't like. Keeping a boat on a trailer in our yard, being able to install a basketball goal.
Uh-huh.
Being able to have a play set in the back for the toddlers, trampoline, the placement of flags, the placements of bird feeders, the color of the home, the architectural control committee in terms of having and making any improvement to the property,
uh-huh,
screening in the backside of the property and adding a screen porch. The list just kind of goes on and on and on, and these restrictive covenants are in place for the whole of the development and to keep them according to the developer, a certain consistency. Well, that's fine and dandy unless you are, you know, someone who really wants to get in your backyard every single
right.
weekend and play basketball with your three boys.
Uh-huh.
Then you've got a problem.
Right.
So these things need to be looked at. They need to be reviewed because once you buy in, that is the end of that.
Right.
The ability to rent. A lot of folks now are trying to convert their larger properties to Airbnbs and things mm-hmm. of that nature. Well, that's good again, isolated circumstances, but not if the association does not allow it. The association, I just reviewed some covenants for a gentleman who's very upset. He had no idea, no clue that he could not rent his very large cottage in parts because of the fact that the covenants say that he can only have year rentals and he cannot have monthly or weekly rentals in that particular subdivision. Now, Lockwood, let's move over here a minute to kind of the types of deeds.
Okay.
There also are several different ways to own real property. And one of the most common methods is between married people. The state of North Carolina takes the position that if a deed is between two persons who are married, then by operation of law, they intend for the survivor of that marriage to take the title to the property. This is known as tenants by entirety. So if a husband and wife own the property together, then it's comforting many times for me to be able to tell the wife, well, yes, you have now the title to the property because it was titled jointly between you and your husband. And upon his death, the property vests 100% in you. This is kind of an ancient law in our state. Again, it goes back to some of the stuff, Lockwood, through the years that we've talked about, where there's just, there are so many spousal rights.
Right.
The rights of a spouse are just, it seems just limitless in many states, including North Carolina. And so here we go with one. If the property is just titled husband and wife, then guess what? There's survivorship.
Right.
Now, this completely changes when property is titled, you know, between two brothers, between two business partners, between, three people who inherit property under the will of their mother or grandmother. Now, of course, the property is held not jointly, but it's held as tenants in common. And this is a very extensive way in which most properties are held tenants in common. And there is a whole body of law that then evolves around a tenants in common ownership. We get the question often, you know, that the three children have inherited the property from their parents.
Right.
And then one of them says, well, you know, I'm going to live there for a while. And they can, Lockwood. That's what's interesting about this. The undivided interest or tenants in common interest in the state of North Carolina is kind of a very involved state of affairs in that you own the part, but you own the whole.
Wow.
And whatever that means. Okay, and we lawyers are in that all the time, as one can imagine. You own the whole, you own the part, but you have control over the whole. And so sometimes there will be issues with who can access the property, who can rent the property, who can live on the property, who can make repairs to the property. And all of this comes up when property is just simply owned in undivided interest. Also, unlike the tenant by entirety interest, Lockwood, an undivided interest just simply that particular interest, be it 50% or a third or a fourth, whatever we happen to own, that particular interest passes through our estate. So it is not as if it is with right of survivorship to our business partner or to our brother or our sister. It passes through our estate and would go according to our will.
All right. One quick question. I want to go back to the issue of the husband and wife topic. And the husband dies, or the wife dies, and they're titled in both names. Once one of the parties dies, should they then go back and retitle the property in some fashion? In other words, we've talked about this, cleaning up the documents. And then I'm going to go then to the issue of the question related to deeds in common, the fact
tenants
that you...
Tenants in common.
Yeah, I'm sorry, what is that again?
Tenants in common.
Yeah, tenants in common. But my first question, in the case of a family member, a husband and wife, should there be an effort to... remove the name of the deceased? Does that help, or is that just unnecessary?
It's not necessary. It is unnecessary because when the title searcher goes to the registry, they're going to see that there's a certificate of death of the husband.
Okay.
And they're going to see the deed prior to the certificate that the property was held by the two of them, and then they're going to apply this doctrine of tenants by entirety, and they're going to put the entirety of the property in the name of the surviving spouse.
Okay.
So it's just not necessary to redo the deed.
All right, but how about the tenants in common when one of the party dies and the transition of that real estate propriety transfers to a child or something of this nature? What happens in that case? And what I'm thinking here is, when I'm talking to you, Cecil, and again, Cecil Harvell with us this afternoon, Harvell and Collins, we're talking about deeds, is the amount of paperwork that's involved in this, a record keeping, if not just paperwork. But what about the tenants in common when one of the individuals, let's say three individuals, one of them dies and their rights are passed to a child?
The answer to this question is that the will, the estate, mm-hmm. will disclose who the owners are of the property. The
uh-huh.
two of them, the three of them, the four of them,
mm-hmm.
however many heirs there happen to be in the estate relative to that property. So the estate will, in fact, if you will, perfect the title to the two, three, four of them.
Okay.
But it is absolutely true that sometimes, for clarity purposes, there might be an executor's deed out of the decedent into the two, three, or four, just for the sake of clarity. And so that one is kind of, I would say, Lockwood, a 50-50 proposition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the children intend to sell the property after the death of their parents,
mm-hmm.
then that's just going to flow right on through the real estate world, if you will, and there'll be a sale. Usually this deed that I'm speaking about that comes about after the death, that is the kind of thing where they're going to hold on to the property for a while, okay? They're going to rent the property.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to lease the property, things of that nature. They're going to hold on to the property. Now, we as the lawyer might say to the family, well, it really is best that we put the title in the four of your names, or we even transfer the title to an LLC, a limited liability company, or a trust, some entity, so that we have kind of centralized management relative to the plan to rent this property long term.
One of the terms you used a few moments ago was the word to perfect a deed. How do you go about doing that?
Well, I guess I was using in an estate.
Okay.
We may prepare an executor's deed just to make it more clear, and I use the word perfect,
mm-hmm.
the title between the three or four, or, as I mentioned, deeding it over to an LLC,
mm-hmm.
something like that, just to make the title a bit clearer. I mean, when you've got a title search that ends that the property's owned with four children,
right.
Well, you know, who does the association contact? Where
right.
does the tax bill go?
Right.
Where does the insurance, who does the insurance company contact? There are issues that evolve when people are going to own property forever and ever and ever in a day,
mm-hmm.
in the name of, you know, four siblings.
Right.
And again, as I mentioned before, four siblings becomes, you know, 10 siblings
right.
very, very quick when these folks die, because their quarter interest, if it in fact is four children, then their quarter interest goes to their children or according to their estate plan. And so all of a sudden, rather than four, we've got six, we've got eight, we've got 12. This can become a problem.
I can imagine it can. And of course, you've got a lot of situations where families have, particularly here in Eastern North Carolina, families have owned property, farms, things of this nature for long periods of times, multi-generation. And then they, for whatever the reason, the families scatter. And now all of a sudden, as a result of the death in the family, you, the attorney, are trying to get hold of all of the members of the family, the estate. And then in the process, because of the fact that we're so transitory, we're moving, the final culmination of either the sale of the property or finally defining who's going to be responsible, that strikes me as something that you might want to consider. And I say this to, say, myself, for example, as we are getting into that will issue of setting up our estates, possibly establishing some, I'm going to say, entity. You mentioned a trust or something of this nature, where it could be focused. Is that a good thinking on my part?
Absolutely, Lockwood. That's kind of like a, quote, bingo, Lockwood.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, when we're in conferences with families, you can see now how you move from one area of the law to another.
Right.
You move out of the estate over into real estate, or maybe you're in a real estate conference and it turns to a trust or an estate. These are, of course, you know, absolutely interrelated. No question about it.
You know, and then, of course, we touched on this issue, and I think another time, on these homeowners associations or these restrictive covenants and things of this nature. Again, how, you know, identifying the individuals who are going to be accountable and responsible for this. All right, we're talking about deeds here, Cecil. Are there other forms of deeds that we have to consider?
Mostly, Lockwood, there's either a tenants by entirety deed, or there is a deed that places the property in undivided interest between two or more people. There is a bit of a hybrid in that if you own property with someone, you can intentionally, with writing in the deed with an enforceable provision, state in the deed that if I die, I desire my interest to pass to the other owner with survivorship. This would be, you know, obviously the folks are not married. This sometimes can happen in quote, the significant relationship files where, you know, a gentleman has lost his wife and but is now has been living with a partner and another woman, if you will, for, you know, 20 years, and they haven't gotten married and they don't intend to get married, but he wants his home to pass to his significant, you know, his girlfriend, if you will, his partner in life, if he were to die. And so we prepare a deed whereby it is with survivorship to Susan or Mary or whoever the girl might be.
You know, the interesting aspect of that, Cecil, and of course we don't have to get into this today, is this concept of a relationship that is codified. The assumption is that the term you hear, common law wife, common law partner, that doesn't exist in North Carolina, does it?
No, it does not.
So,
it does not. And we see that cut both ways. We have really seen some, you know, you can't put, we don't want to judge circumstances, but we've had circumstances where, you know, someone has lived with each other for many, many years, and now all of a sudden, you know, they're ousted, you know, by family members that never even came by the property, things of that nature. But Lockwood, we just could go on and on. For instance, I do want to say one more sentence, a couple sentences. You know, how about in a brother, sister, three or four people owning property together? How about if only one of them pays the taxes?
Right.
How about if one of them goes by and collects the rent and doesn't share it with the others? What if one of them has the resources to improve and repair the property, but the others don't? What if the property has a mortgage on it and only one of them pays the mortgage, but the others do not contribute? And as you know, Lockwood, sitting there, you're thinking, wow, this just goes on and on and on, doesn't it, Steve?
It does.
And the answer to that question is yes, it does. And so it is very important that there be a structure to the ownership of real estate when it is owned by more than one person. And we touched on that, and that might even be the theme of the program today, Lockwood. How do you structure property when it's owned by several people? What do you do? Because centralization of decision making and management and bill paying and all of that can become very important in those kinds of files.
I'm hearing again, and we talk about this so many times with Cecil Harvell, Harvell and Collins. And by the way, just to remind you, that number 252-726-9050. We're hearing from Cecil Harvell, and we've talked about this so many times, Cecil. And it's just, it evolves out of estate planning, planning. Be intentional in that planning. Otherwise, you leave behind a rat's nest of problems, it strikes me. I really am. Okay, we're talking about deeds today. More to come, I'm sure, in the weeks ahead. Cecil, as always, thank you very much for being with us.
Absolutely, Lockwood. Always enjoy it. And thank you for giving us this opportunity to put out this.
This is important.
To put out these facts and circumstances, and to distribute some legal information out there. I think it's real important.
It is very important. Harvell and Collins, again, go to their website, harvellandcollins.com, or the number 252-726-9050.